The Recipes for Life podcast is a conversation about my favorite ingredients for a healthy human experience. We take an informed look at topics that include nutritional and emotional well-being, as well as expanded consciousness. This podcast is presented by the Pete Evans Healthy Everyday range of super blends, including collagen super blends, bone broth super blends, and check out our new all grass-fed, grass-finished beef liver capsules. And there's more to come. You can find out more at gelatinaustralia.com. That's www.gelatinaustralia.com. Kirsty Wirth is the founder of culturedwellness.com, and her philosophy is simple. She believes we need to accept the cards we've been dealt and then take responsibility for our own health and that of the next generation. It's about making sure that we don't continue to hand down these health issues that could be stopped now. Her mission is to reach more people and families in our community and to be able to spread the word about how fermenting can be an easy and powerful way to nourish the gut microbiome for good health. You can find out more about Kirsty at culturedwellness.com. That's Cultured Wellness with a K. KulturedWellness.com. Kirsty, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. How are you today?
I'm good, and thanks for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure to actually invite you onto the podcast because you and I have known each other for quite some time now, and you're sort of my go-to person when I want to talk about things to do with the gut. Now, let's just talk about how you got to be, I guess, so experienced with gut issues. What was the journey for you to get here?
Yeah, look, I think I'm like everyone in the fact that you can only really understand a gut issue until you've got one. So I certainly led a pretty awesome high life, but it led me to having quite significant gut problems. And it was a big part of my life, but like so many people, I just kept on pushing it down and it'll be fine, and putting up with such significant gut issues. And then it wasn't until that my son was born that I really understood the impacts. And so I went through this whole process of watching my poor son have significant gut infections, and which, you know, impacted his behaviour so significantly, and then actually ended up getting to the point where he had an autism diagnosis, and he couldn't sort of talk in the end, and his whole body was really shutting down. So yeah, we went on this amazing journey of finding out how do you test what's going on in there, and how do you repair it, and how does someone recover their gut and therefore recover their health and their brain capacity and immune response and all that sort of stuff. So it's been this incredible journey of learning, and I'm absolutely a total nerd when it comes to the literature and the science, and I've gone on to do quite a lot of research and study in this area. And we were very fortunate to be part of a research study in Canada, at a research hospital in Canada. And that was amazing to learn more and to understand our body and really to help find out what was really going on. So, yeah, it's been a pretty cool adventure. And certainly I would never have guessed that I would have ended up here and understanding so much about the gut and then and making our beautiful cultures and all the stuff that we do now with regards to gut health. So, yeah, I've really lived and breathed it, and that's why I'm so passionate about it, and specifically passionate about kids being really robust and, you know, being the best person that they can be.
So let's go back then to what actually happens in the gut for it to cause imbalance or dysbiosis, or shoot me through some technical terms here, scientific terms, and educate me on why aren't people's guts working properly. And let's get into the tips and the tools of what people can do down the track. But what is the issue? What causes gut issues? And I know it's probably multifaceted, but shoot me, go.
Yeah. As you said, look, most people, if I'm going to talk about a few here, most people have all of these things. So the first one that I see all the time is actually just good old-fashioned stress. Our stress completely reduces our body's ability to digest. And when we can't digest, we can't assimilate our nutrients, and then everything gets out of whack in our gut. So we have the beneficial microbes dying out, and we have, you know, the pathogenic microbes really loving the environment and growing and causing that change. So stress is a big one. And as you know, like, we are all faced with stress every time our mobile phone, you know, bing, that's a form of stress these days. It doesn't have to be that sort of tiger racing for us anymore. So stress plays a big part. Antibiotics is a huge thing that's been happening that can cause significant gut dysbiosis. Unfortunately, antibiotics can really change the environment of the gut by killing off the beneficial microbes and leaving us just with those pathogens and with, you know, terrible infections that really overrun and take over the body. And, you know, the other thing that causes such significant gut issues is when our immune system isn't robust enough to handle what we're faced with in a day. So when we're run down, we're nutrient deficient, our immune system isn't as good as it needs to be. And then it's just open slather for all sorts of pathogens to come in and cause that imbalance. So that's just a few, but, you know, we obviously, we swim in chlorinated water. It's, you know, we're killing off gut bugs just by doing that. And we're not accessing nature anymore. I mean, we get all our microbes from nature. We should spend all our time out in nature. And those real basics like eating fermented foods, all the kind of traditional things that kept our, you know, our forebears really robust, they're just not happening anymore. We're sedentary, we live indoors, and we're not getting that connection to nature and therefore those connections to microbes.
So how does somebody know if they've got an issue with their guts? Talk me through the process.
Yeah, so someone might be like me, where you literally had diarrhea like 13 times a day and couldn't, you know, maintain sort of any form of energy. So obviously you're going to know you're going to have some gut issues. Mm-hmm. But they don't have to be as overt as that. You might just feel really fatigued all the time, or you might have joint pain, or you might have mental health issues. You might suffer from anxiety or depression. It's all connected to the gut. So it doesn't have to be that really obvious, oh, my gosh, you know, I have to rush to the toilet. You know, a random rash or eczema, psoriasis, learning difficulties, you know, retaining information, remembering things. We now know they're all really significantly linked to the gut. And so it's, you know, I always joke now that if someone's got an issue, I'm like, oh, well, that's linked to your gut, because it pretty much is everything.
So to get accurate testing, obviously the physical symptoms of it can be constipation, it can be chronic diarrhea, it can be, as you said, mental imbalance, depression, anxiety, these types of feelings or emotional symptoms. So how do you, just without using your gut to tell you what to do in 2017, 2018, what are some tests that people can get done, and who should they see to actually find out what is going on in the gut? Because from my understanding, just popping a probiotic pill could actually be causing more harm than good, because you don't want to be possibly putting in certain strains of bacteria into your gut that you mightn't already need or have.
Yeah, well, that's kind of where my culture started from, the culture wellness cultures, because every time I had a probiotic, I just got worse. And it wasn't until I got the testing and I really understood who was living in my gut, did I realize, oh my gosh, every time I was taking that probiotic, it was actually exacerbating the problem instead of being beneficial. So the testing is absolutely paramount. I mean, I see lots and lots of people sort of stabbing around in the dark, trying this, trying that, wanting to find out, you know, what's going on. But until you get that solid data and that solid testing, you won't know. So the testing is obviously a stool sample. You can find a wonderful integrative doctor or a functional doctor who will provide those tests, or a naturopath will be able to provide those tests. And what that test does is really look at the composition of who's living in your gut. So I call them dudes, and we have some awesome dudes that live in there that help us feel vibrant. They literally dictate what we want to eat. They dictate how we behave. They dictate the kind of friends and partners we want to hang out with. And then, unfortunately, we've got some pretty poor dudes that can live in there, and they can flip that whole situation upside down. And so until you know who you're dealing with, and until you know who you know, who's in there, it's very, very hard to make changes and really, you know, sort of beneficial quick changes. So the testing's important. The one that I really like to use is the bioscreen testing, because it cultures who's living in there and gives you a really good indication of who's the most potent in there and who's doing the job and who's causing problems. So it's really important. I would love Medicare to sponsor everyone once a year to have a gut test. Can you imagine where we'd be? It would be awesome.
When you say once a year, what does that mean? Does the terrain or the bacteria or our microbiome change dramatically from year to year or season to season, or depending on what food we're putting in there and stress levels? And talk to me a little bit more about that, please.
Yeah. So your gut environment can change within 3 days. It's really quick. So traveling, lots of people say, oh, you know, when I'm traveling, I just feel a bit bloated and not quite right. That's enough to change your environment. Food plays a huge part. Those little microbes who live in there, they have a very specific diet that they want to eat, so they grow and multiply. And if we don't feed them that diet, they die and they change very, very quickly. So it's we can, although I say once a year, I mean, we can change that environment so quickly. We can pick up a parasite quickly. We can pick up an infection. So, yeah, it's really, really important to know that those changes can happen. I've just seen a Professor Rob Knight speak recently, and he's so into this that he tests his stool when he travels to see how much those microbes change and, you know, how much damage is travelling and going into stressful situations causing. So hopefully his data will be out soon. He's with the Human Gut Project. So we'll wait and see what that says.
You talk about the good dudes and the not so good dudes. Is it that black and white, or are we just sort of scratching the surface of what we know? I mean, where are we at this particular time in our science?
We're basically in kindergarten. In fact, we're probably in daycare. We are so, you know, so at the beginning of this amazing adventure into finding out all about these microbes, and we have so many that we don't know about. And at this stage, it's definitely not as black and white as the good and the bad dudes, because even when we deal with things like candida, for example, we don't mind a little bit in there. So, you know, we want that, you know, candida in our body. It's a symbiotic to us. But when it, you know, grows out of balance, that's when it causes a problem. So we're still learning about all these different microbes. How are they beneficial, and when does that change into not being beneficial, and how do we change it? So it is a really, really exciting time. I mean, when I first started researching the gut, you know, probably 10 years ago, there wasn't the white papers and the information, and I certainly couldn't listen to a podcast or read a website and, you know, get beautiful books and understand it in layman's terms. I mean, I had to sort of delve into the hardcore sort of research. So it's an exciting time, and there's funding there. You know, we're looking at funding to how does the gut impact diabetes? How does the gut impact mental health? Like, it's being recognised now, and thankfully the researchers are getting the funding to find all of this out.
So going back to when we get our tests done through BioScreen and you get those results back to your practitioner, whether it be a naturopath or an integrative or functional medical doctor, what are the steps for them then to help you understand or to take you onto the next part of the journey? What are they looking for?
Yeah. So, you know, for example, if someone came to Culture Wellness and we went through their BioScreen, we would look at, first of all, those ancestral strains, so your beneficial microbes. So do you have any? What composition are they? And how are they best suiting you? So the first thing is to look at those good dudes and how are they helping you? Now, if you don't have many of the bacteroides or those beneficial microbes, chances are you're not going to be digesting your food. Mm-hmm. And so your practitioner would look, you know, really help and guide you through, okay, let's try and work through your digestion. Let's look at your diet to ensure there's nothing inflammatory and it's all super easy to digest. And then you would look at the beneficial microbes and like lactobacillus and the bifidobacterium strains. And if they're low, talking about what kind of fermented foods can I put in? How can I make changes to that terrain? And then looking at if there's any parasites or any pathogens in there. Now, if they're there, it's, there's a path to go down to really change that environment and in a way that's not going to damage all the beneficial microbes. So not looking at antibiotics as the first sort of port of call, and looking at herbal blends or food as medicine to try and change that environment. So, working with a functional practitioner, you would be able to look at a bit of a plan ahead, but the plan would definitely be diet, lifestyle, fermented foods, and some form of antimicrobials to, if there's any pathogens there, to, you know, change that.
And what's the success rate for this, for somebody to improve or get to a point 6 months, a year down the track, 2 years down the track, and give us the timeline for, I guess, gut healing to take place?
Yeah. So in the naturopathic code, for every 1 year that you were out of balance, it's 1 month of healing. So for me, I had 30 months of healing before I could even get myself into a state where I felt robust and like I was really balanced. So this takes a long time. You've got to really build up all of your nutrients. You've got to build up your immune system. It takes a while to grow those gut microbes. So it does take time. And really the people that get through the other side are the ones that make the awesome commitment to their body and the commitment to their health. And they do make the changes and they do all of the changes, which isn't just about the diet and the food, but their lifestyle. And as we talked about before, accessing nature. So when we work with clients at Cultured Wellness, we do a very intensive 6 months because it really does take that long to get through. And people who really commit and are super ready for it, they will get there and they will be able to have a thriving health and thriving gut.
So anyone that's listening that thinks they're pretty healthy, would you still suggest someone gets their stool tested?
Yeah, I would, because I don't think our definition of healthy or normal is quite in line. I know for myself, if you had have asked me, oh, are you healthy? I probably would have said yes, because I was very active and loved my sports. But really on the inside, it wasn't the case. So I think everyone should get it tested, because we don't know what normal and healthy feels like anymore.
This probably leads me on to my next question. How important is the mother's and father's gut microbiome prior to conception for the coming generation or for their children?
Absolutely vital. And so this is where, you know, my sort of issues for my son started, because I had such significant dysbiosis in my body that when a child comes down through the birth canal, when they're born, they're bathed in their mother's microbes. And so unfortunately for my son, he was bathed in all pathogenic microbes. So his life started with, you know, an imbalance, a stress on the immune system. And so there he was in just complete fight or flight. And when my daughter came along, I had a completely different gut. It was still healing, but it was different. And so the mother, and especially the father, it's so important. We share our microbes with our kids. They're in contact with us all the time. And those microbes just set up their life. So it's absolutely vital, which is great. People are understanding this more now. I get lots of women who are wanting to become pregnant coming to see us at Culture Wellness and wanting to get their bodies ready. So I've noticed a real shift, which is very exciting.
If we talk about cesarean for a moment, they don't get that bathing of the microbiome from the mother the same way as being born through the vaginal canal. Is that correct?
Absolutely. And so what we see is with children that are born via cesarean, when we look at the microbes in their gut, they resemble the microbes of our skin and also pathogenic microbes that we find in hospitals like staph. And because that's how the baby has got their microbes. So it's very much an imbalance for them, and it can really dictate their immune system. There's a really cool research study out about doing something which is called seeding. So when a child is born by a cesarean, they use a swab to take the microbes from the mother's vagina and swab it all over the baby and to put those beneficial microbes back into the baby. And the research was for 7 years, and they kept testing the cesarean kids' microbes and their gut bacteria, and it was tracking the same as a vaginal delivery. So the seeding is such an exciting new thing, because obviously we want cesareans. We don't want to lose mums if it's very, very tricky and there's a problem with birth. And so it's great that we can use that seeding if it's necessary.
So if a child was born through a C-section, what are the steps for them to cultivate, I guess, healthy bacteria for them? Mm-hmm. If they're already sort of, I wouldn't say compromised, but if they don't have that to start with, is there any way of encouraging good bacterial growth?
Yeah, so just stick them out in the dirt and let them eat as much as possible. So the dirt plays a huge part, being in the ocean. That's where we get all of our ancestral microbes from. So it's just absolutely vital that they're not surrounded by this sort of hygiene, lots of bacterial sprays, really letting them get out there and be exposed to those microbes. Starting fermented foods at a very early age is very important. And we know that bone broth literally grows those bacteroides that we were talking about before. So from an early age, get that bone broth in. It seals the gut, makes it so robust, and will grow good gut bugs. So just your first foods, fermented foods, broths, they all make a huge difference and can literally change the child's course of life.
You mentioned swimming in the ocean, and it's something that our family loves to do. And you touched on earlier, you mentioned chlorinated pools. Can you just take us a little bit deeper into chlorine and what it does in a pool situation for our gut bacteria?
Yeah, so chlorine is designed to kill off bacteria so we don't get sick. That's kind of the main reason for it and why they use it in pools. But our body is basically made up of microbes and bacteria. So when we go swimming in a chlorinated pool, that chlorine really impacts our own microbes and our own bacteria. So when you're swimming along, if you swallow it, it's going to go down into your gut and change it, because it's literally killing it off. It's like poison. And if, on the same on your skin, it's going to change the pH of your skin and change the microbes that are living on your skin. So it can be really damaging. Really, really damaging. So ideally we wouldn't be swimming in chlorinated pools or drinking chlorinated water, and that can include our tap water.
I was going to get onto that in a second, but I think you've just answered that for us. One of the things that I love about the work that we do is it's about prevention. I mean, that's definitely my driving force, is preventative measures so that people don't get sick and that they can live a healthy and healthy life, and the coming generations will hopefully have a better start than some of us that were brought up with the junk food diet to a degree and breakfast cereals and whatnot. Because, and this is nothing against our parents or anything, it's just that the information wasn't so readily known. So let's just talk about it for a minute, for if anyone's listening out there that is wanting to plan on starting a family, how important is it then, and what would you stress would be the most important factors for the mother and father who want to conceive?
Well, I would go back to step one being that testing. So find out what's going on and how robust your body is and, your microbes. So that would be my first port of call. Secondly, I would absolutely look to diet. It can make or break someone. So adding in all those beneficial broths and fermented foods, lots and lots of beneficial fiber. So I would look at the diet. And the other thing that I would look at is really how are you living your life? So are you inside all the time, exposed to big bright lights? Are you watching TV? Are you sedentary? Even for mums, if they're not strong, carrying your child is going to be really hard work. So just basic things like being strong and having good core strength and that sort of whole picture of a person will really help if you're wanting to start a family. And understanding, even when you bring that bubs home, what chemicals are you using in your environment? If you've bought new furniture, what does it smell like? What's going on? All of these things will really impact how that baby grows up and, how their immune systems develop. So it really is looking at slowly but surely, and I know this can sound really overwhelming, so you have to chunk it down, but looking at sort of all those aspects and how can we make those beautiful beneficial changes so it is benefiting the baby and benefiting ourselves.
And breastfeeding?
Yeah, so breastfeeding is amazing. There's sugars in the breast milk that directly feed those beautiful new gut microbes that have started to develop in the child. So it's just absolutely, you know, amazing how it works. There's quite a lot of sugar and beautiful fats. We know that in breast milk there's certain types of fats that can really protect the baby and it can be quite antimicrobial if they're fighting off anything. And obviously there's colostrum in there to help the immune system develop. And there's also the importance of the breast milk being able to, you know, obviously being a complete food. So if it's possible, it's not always possible for mums, but if it is possible, it has a huge part to play in, once again, developing those lifelong gut strains that we have because it feeds them. And when we're starting to find out in the research, slowly but surely, this how microbes develop over the course of a baby and a toddler's life. And really it sort of starts to solidify around 7. So if you're listening and you're like, oh, my child's 2 and, oh, you know, there's nothing I can do now. You know, even up till 7, they're developing a really, a really diverse terrain. There's so much you can do, but you can do something at 70. So it's never too late. I thought I'd just pop that in there. It's never too late to change it. But especially for kids, just jump on in and do something, you know, get started.
I like how you're talking about getting tested prior to thinking about conception for the coming generation. I do have a question, though. You talk about antibiotics being quite harmful for our gut bacteria, and I've even witnessed it myself with my own daughter because she had an operation when she was 2 weeks old, and obviously she had to have antibiotics, and it's wonderful having modern medicine, but at the same time, there's also sometimes a flow-on effect, and her gut bacteria has been a little bit compromised ever since. The question that I've got is, I know that it's a very contentious issue, but if we talk about vaccinations at the moment, how do we ensure that a child has their microbiome or a healthy microbiome or gut bacteria prior to going through that process of being vaccinated? Because from what I've read and from different sources is that if a child has healthy, robust microbiome or gut bacteria, having a vaccine shouldn't be an issue. Whereas if a child is potentially compromised and doesn't have some beneficial strains of bacteria and that child has the vaccination or a certain type of it, there could be complicated issues from that.
Absolutely. So when we have a vaccination, the whole premise behind it is that we have a little bit of whatever the virus is or whatever the vaccination is, and then the body's immune system develops a response to it. And so then we have those antibodies to it for the future. You know, that's the basic premise behind it. Now, if your immune system isn't strong enough to develop those antibodies, and if it's not strong enough to be able to fight it, what we see happening is that those, whatever the virus is or whatever the vaccination is, that then seems to embed in the body and bunker down because the immune system is not strong enough to fight back. So, absolutely. If we have children that have got a really strong, healthy immune system, which comes from our gut bacteria, if that gut bacteria is not strong and we can't have that robust immune system, I can absolutely see how it'd be very difficult for children to be able to be strong enough with those vaccinations and to build those antibodies. So, you know, we see, you know, kids that struggle with the vaccinations. And that certainly is because, you know, their body, their gut, everything's not strong enough to be able to cope with them.
So there's nothing essentially wrong with the vaccine. It's just, should we possibly be looking in the future to get children's gut microbiome tested prior to these procedures?
So I don't know much about what's in vaccines, so I can't comment on that. But absolutely, if you've got a really strong mum, she's got an awesome gut microbiome and she's delivering a baby that's really, really, you know, the immune system's set, then, yeah, they should be able to handle it. I was just going to tell a story about my experience when I was I had planned and had trained for many, many, almost a year to go and climb a mountain in South America. Mm-hmm. And I had to be able to get into the country. I had to have the yellow fever injection, so a vaccination.
And I'd never really had a vaccination before because I'm quite sensitive to those things, but I couldn't go and climb my dream mountain without this vaccination. So 4 weeks out, I went and had the vaccination and it just hit me like a freight train. My body couldn't fight it. My body couldn't handle it. So I lived through this whole yellow fever experience. I had to be hospitalized. I couldn't get up out of bed. And then I missed out on climbing my mountain because I lost all of my strength and all of my fitness. And I didn't have a strong immune system. And I certainly didn't have a strong gut. So I know even from my own personal experiences, I couldn't handle that vaccination. It just wasn't strong enough for it.
So the wish list in the future is for everybody to get their guts tested throughout their life so they know basically where they're at from an immune strength position.
Absolutely. And then a couple of generations down the track, we won't even need to do it. Everyone will be strong enough and we'll all be fine. But, you know, for now, we're still in the early stages of making these big changes. But, yeah, totally. If we get the test done, you can make, you know, you can literally change your next generation's life. And I know that sounds idealistic, but it literally can.
Let's talk about FMT, because this was part of your journey. And I'd love for you to be able to explain to people what FMT actually means, because when people first hear of it, they go, what are you talking about? But when someone explains it properly, you go, okay, well, that actually makes quite a lot of sense. So let me hear about your thoughts of when someone actually suggested it and why you had to go through this process.
Yeah. So an FMT is a fecal microbial transplant, and it is as it sounds. So most of our microbes, like a good sort of 30% of our microbes, are in our stool when we eliminate our stool. And so what happens is when someone like myself and my kids, we've all had FMTs, the fecal microbial transplants, when you have very few beneficial microbes in your body, sometimes the only way that you can change that is actually to take someone else's microbes and put them inside your own body. Now, when nothing's been cut open, there's no sort of major surgeries or anything like that. But what it is the microbes in our gut are what we call anaerobes. So they don't survive in an environment where there's oxygen. Mm-hmm. So when we take probiotics, there's obviously oxygen and we take them and that's all fine. But if we want to replace those ancestral microbes, those beneficial bacteroides, just to name one of the types that we want to replace, they don't survive out of that environment where there's oxygen. So it's very hard to make a probiotic or very hard to change that. So, I mean, FMT has been used for thousands and thousands of years. They used to call it yellow soup in China. Mm-hmm. I've since learned that elephants feed their newborns the mother's stool, and that's their first foods. So it's very much about transferring those microbes. And I was even chatting with my grandfather when we had, around the time we had the FMTs, and trying to, you know, politely explain it to an almost 90-year-old. And he said, oh, we've been doing that on a farm for years. You've got a sick cow, you just grab some poo and, you know, put it in its mouth and off you go. So it's in nature. So it's not, a lot of people think it's this new crazy whiz bang thing, but it's something that's been in nature for a long, long time. And then what that means is when we put someone else's microbes in our gut and they flourish, it's this concept of crowding out. So for me and my son, for example, we had an FMT because we had a very horrible thing called Clostridium difficile. It's quite life-threatening. And really at this stage, the only way to get rid of that is through an FMT, where we had to take some pretty serious antibiotics to kill it off. Mm-hmm. But then when that went, we were kind of left with a clean slate. And then we had these beneficial microbes and we popped them into our gut and they populated our gut and crowded out any other infections that were in there that may grow and multiply. So it's like a competition in there. So we had ours done in Canada, so I have a Canadian gut, which is pretty funny. So sometimes I'm like, am I eating Canadian? Like, am I craving Canadian food? But it's such a wonderful, exciting time. I mean, we had it done sort of a long time ago when it was real infancy into understanding it, and now there's research into FMT and diabetes and mental health, and it's a really exciting time. But yeah, I think some people are quite nervous of it, but it's just such a wonderful way to change the state of your body very quickly.
And I guess the only way that you can find out whether you do need that is by getting the bioscreen or getting the testing done and having a health professional actually look through it and say, hey, listen, you might want to consider this if A, B and C doesn't work out for you. Is that correct?
Exactly. And what I would say, and this is from my experience and obviously working with lots and lots of people, guiding them and helping them towards getting an FMT, is that it's not, you don't just suddenly get better. You have to get your body ready. You still have to have a wonderful digestive system. You still have to eat the right foods afterwards. You still have to take care of how, you know, of your lifestyle. So, you know, we're sort of seeing a bit of a trend now of FMTs being cool and FMTs being, oh, well, that'll fix it. I'll have my FMT and I'll be back on track again. But you can, as I said, you can change that environment in 3 days. So you might have the FMT, but if the diet's not right or your digestion's not right, you can kill off those new microbes pretty quickly.
I think that's fascinating as well, because as part of our documentary, The Magic Pill, we actually followed a patient that had a FMT for his own gut issues. But we interviewed the doctor and we actually didn't end up putting it in the film, because the doctor we talked to about the diet, you know, what diet should this person follow now that he's had the FMT? And he was like, well, whatever they want. I was like, well, you shouldn't, if the gut bacteria wasn't great in the first place, shouldn't you, after the procedure, really try hard to give the gut what it's going to flourish on? And so I took that out of the documentary, because I was like, I was bewildered that modern science had, or modern medicine still hadn't, or in this particular instance, I should say, hadn't caught it on to the fact that, okay, you've done the procedure, now let's make sure that we have longevity for the procedure.
Yeah.
Tell us about your, I guess, food philosophy for somebody that comes to you and they've done some testing and you say, okay, if you want to get on top of this, if you want to get to a point of great health, these are the steps. So talk to us about food and what are the things that people probably should take out of their diet immediately and what are the ones they should celebrate? Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. So I suppose we can sort of, you know, think about if someone came to me and they did have some imbalances and they had some microbes in there that were causing problems. The first thing is that they multiply and love carbohydrates and sugars. Mm-hmm. Now, for some people, myself included, my guts were so out of whack that a banana threw me in a spin because it's still got a lot of sugar. It's got a lot of fructose in there. So I'm not talking about Snickers bars or donuts. Even for some people, just beautiful, healthy fruit can trip you up and cause problems. So absolutely sugar is a big one in whatever form that it comes in. And carbohydrates, so, you know, pathogenic microbes, they just love it. They multiply on carbohydrates, they multiply on sugars. So if your diet's pretty heavy on carbohydrates and grains and sugars, then you're going to have to make some pretty big changes and you're going to have to focus on really moving towards beautiful quality meats, quality fats, and then heaps of truckloads of veggies. So that would be the first thing. So we love people to sort of follow a ketogenic diet. You know, ketosis is obviously so powerful for cleaning up any issues within the body. And we have this awesome ability as a human to use our mitochondria to either burn glucose for our fuel, so for example, having that banana, or burning fat for fuel. So having a
avocado,
beautiful, you know, coconut oil, avocado, thank you, yeah. So we can either burn both of those. Now, there are certain pathogens and parasites and infections that we can get. They don't have a mitochondria, so they can't burn glucose or fat. So if we pop our body into a state of ketosis and we're burning that fat and we're using those ketones for our energy, we make changes really quickly because we basically take the food source away from those pathogens, parasites, for example, and suddenly you are a home that they don't want to live in anymore. Whereas if you're fueling your body with foods that are going to feed them, they're not going to go anywhere. They're going to hang out. They're going to bunker down and stay there and cause problems for literally the rest of your life. They'll have no reason to move on. So the first thing we do is really stitch up that diet and make it, you know, feeding the beneficial microbes. And we use antimicrobials like beautiful herbs. They're synergistic to the body and they allow the body to do what it needs to do, but supporting the body as opposed to sort of bombing everything and hoping afterwards that, you know, we can grow back from it. So, yeah, certainly the food steps is taking out grains, taking out inflammatory foods. And those inflammatory foods might look like obviously sugar and grains, dairy. So very much a ketogenic diet with a paleo sort of bent to it is what we use.
Why does dairy have cause an issue in some people or a lot of people?
Let me sort of break that down. So for most of history, we haven't had an enzyme that helps us to digest the sugar in dairy. Mm-hmm. So some of us literally don't have the enzyme. So, you know, it just means that it's not the appropriate food for us. Some of us do have the enzyme and can digest it. So there's that component, that real sort of genetic DNA component to it. The second component is that lactase is a sugar. And if you've got issues in your gut, that lactase sugar can actually feed the pathogens, so the parasites, for example, and they live off of that sugar. And so they will multiply every time that you have it. So that's the second problem. And the third problem is dairy, unfortunately, is pasteurized now. So you're basically drinking dead bacteria. Cows aren't eating the grass. There's so, I mean, you know, as you have talked a lot about, they're just not, it's not dairy anymore. But I am a huge fan of butter. And it's, you know, the butyric acid in butter, it literally provides a pH in our gut that is so beneficial for making energy. It's got, you know, all of those beautiful nutrients. So we actually use a lot of ghee and a lot of butter because of how it repairs the gut and how it provides energy.
That's so interesting because so many people that I've had on the podcast always say, I don't eat dairy, but we love butter.
Yeah.
So, butter and ghee is just clarified. Yeah. Butter seems to stick outside of the dairy bubble, and it's fascinating because it's...
Oh, it's incredible. And I do feel like it's medicine. It's incredible when we, you know, we have our beautiful kids that we work with, and when they start to be able to digest the butter, I mean, a lot of people can't. You have to work towards getting to be able to digest butter. And when they do, they just take off. It, you know, we really see huge gains. It's wonderful.
So even butter can be problematic for people until their gut is right.
Totally. So butter still has a little bit of that casein protein in it. Mm-hmm. And if you have a leaky gut, that big casein protein, it's not going to get digested very well, and it's just going to seep straight into the bloodstream, and it's not supposed to be there. So your immune system's going to just, what's going on here? And they're going to mount an attack on that protein and cause a major inflammatory response. So you've got to seal up that gut, get that digestion happening, and then you'll be able to, you know, have your butter and have your ghee.
Fantastic. So that, I guess that's why paleo seems to work across the board for people when they first adopt it, is because it strips out those inflammatory foods, or the most common ones. I guess eggs and nuts can still be inflammatory, and nightshades for certain people, and also some seeds. So when people come to you, do you go the full autoimmune paleo approach by taking the eggs and nightshades out as well?
Yeah, totally. So we pull everything out because exactly what you were explaining, sometimes they're just too hard to digest and the body is really compromised. We see that we can add them in quite quickly with, you know, sealing up that gut, the bone broth, the beautiful, easy to digest foods, lots of, you know, slow cooked kind of foods. And then we can see that change. But yeah, we do. We really strip it right back. And it's important. You have to if you want to get better.
So as you said, basically it's a lot of vegetables, potentially with the nightshades out, and then it's well-sourced seafood or meat that's either grass-fed or organic or pasteurized or wild-caught, or if it's an oyster, it can be farmed, obviously, or a mussel can be farmed, but only in clean waters. And anything else, do you actually include fermented foods such as sauerkraut into the diet, when someone comes through, or do you again have to wait till you incorporate some broth for a while until the gut starts to heal before you put in the fermented foods?
Yeah, so this is the beauty about testing. So we can see with the test pretty quickly, okay, can this person handle the fermented foods? And there's two reasons why someone might not be able to handle it. For example, the fermented foods might actually have the microbes that you've got, and so it's exacerbating the problem. Mm-hmm. So if you've got a yeast overgrowth, the last thing you should be drinking is kombucha. And I see people, you know, it's on tap in pubs now. It's crazy. And so we're causing quite a significant dysbiosis by just drinking that one strain. I mean, we need diversity, not just the same old thing. So one of the reasons is with the testing, we know what beneficial probiotics we need to put in there. And the second thing is when you have a leaky gut, sometimes the metabolites from those fermented foods can actually leak into the bloodstream, just like we were talking about the casein before. Mm-hmm. So we have to be quite careful, but I do start fermented foods right up from the start, but only the culture wellness cultures, because the strains are so specific to people with gut issues. And we start at super small doses. Like some people, it's like a quarter of a teaspoon. So yeah, we go pretty slow.
So talk to me about your wonderful products that you've created, because you've got a yogurt starter as one of them. You've got kefir starter as well. So why have you chosen these two? And you don't have a sauerkraut starter that I know of, or a kombucha starter that I know of either. I could be wrong here.
Well, we do have starters for the krauts, but you actually make that when you make the kefir. So when you make the kefir, we use coconut water. And so as the base, so they're dairy-free. And obviously, as we know, the coconut water is the most amazing electrolytes and its own properties. So that's beneficial. But with the starters, it kind of all just, you know, once again, it's out of need that all these things sort of happen over time. And I found that we were so sensitive to most probiotics that there was only a few strains that were really beneficial and that could help us to, you know, rebuild our gut. So yeah, I went on this big adventure of finding the best probiotics that didn't have any fillers in them, and then playing around with this ultimate recipe of these starters and developing a probiotic food that was going to balance out the gut. So the kefir, you make, and obviously you drink that, and then you can actually use the kefir that you've made as a starter to do krauts and fruits and all sorts of different, you know, other fermented foods. So, yes, we do have a starter for that, but you just use what you've made. And then the yogurt is such a powerful healing tool. It's with coconut cream, as we know. It's got lots of lauric acid in it and caprylic acid and beautiful fats in there. And the yogurt develops quite a lot of the bifido strains, which are very, very important, especially for kids. So if you were wondering what are the first probiotics I should give to kids, it's always going to be those bifidobacterium strains. They're the kind of ones that, you know, really start out in life. And so that's why we have our yogurt as well. Those strains grow on the fiber, and they're really, really, you know, sort of teeming in the yogurt. And obviously the yogurt has, you know, all of those benefits that we're just talking about. So, yeah, it was kind of just started out of a need that I really wanted to have probiotics, but I was reacting to everything, because lots of probiotic strains have histamines in them. They can cause sort of inflammatory responses. I was trying coconut yogurts, but they have a strain that they use to ferment them called Streptococcus thymiases, and we had a strep problem. So every time we ate the yogurt, we just got sicker and sicker, and it took us a while to work that out. So, yeah, the cultures are awesome for, you know, someone in quite a volatile state, or they're really needing to rebuild, or they're just great for people who just want to quickly make fermented foods that are very, very strong.
Well, I've got a couple more questions for you, and I do love your coconut yogurt starter and also your coconut kefir starter. I think they're absolutely amazing, and Nick, my beautiful wife, and I make them for either, whether up at the farm or in Sydney, and they're just so easy to make. So thank you for making them for us.
They're easy to make, and I should add that they're food-based.
Yeah.
And that's beauty about them. It's not more powders, you know. You get this beautiful starter that's a food and off you go. So it is so easy.
You actually have a parasite cleanse and as well as a candida cleanse, if that's the right terminology. Now, mm-hmm. I'd love for you to explain, number one, what are parasites and what are they doing in our system? And number two, what is candida? And you mentioned it before that actually a little bit isn't too bad to have in us. So talk about those and then talk about what you've developed to help keep these in check, please.
So candida is a form of yeast. And, yeah, as you said, we don't mind a little bit in there. It actually helps us to make nutrients and it absorbs heavy metals. So a little bit's fine. But unfortunately, candida loves sugar. And it loves a processed diet. So most people have candida because most people have had times in their life that they've eaten or had certain things that, you know, propel that, antibiotics propel it. And so we get to the point where we have a candida overgrowth. So there's just too many candida sort of microbes in there and they're crowding out the beneficial ones. Mm-hmm. So we know that these candidas live under a biofilm. So it's kind of like their own little force field that they build to protect themselves. And so what we need to do is when we want to rebalance that candida, we have to break down that biofilm structure that's supporting them and hiding them. And then we know we've got some amazing herbs that really bring that candida back into balance again. And the reason why we want to bring it back into balance is because candida can make us feel really horrible. It's like it releases an acetaldehyde, which is an alcohol. And so we do literally feel quite hungover. We can have, you know, literally alcohol within our body. And so our poor liver has to deal with that. And we see, you know, brain fog and exhaustion and all sorts of stuff just from that candida. And so that would express itself from anything from, you know, an athlete's foot right through to that horrible coated fairy tongue that a lot of people have. So the herbs that we've developed are absolutely incredible at bringing that back into balance. So once again, we were talking about that synergy. We don't want to bomb anything. We just want the balance to be restored. So the herbs that our naturopath Mel organises and hand makes are wonderful for our clients. So we can support that. And I like that, you know, she's making them with love and with all those beautiful herbs, the liquid herbs.
Awesome. And parasites, tell us about them.
Oh, you know, we're talking about dudes. These guys are dudes. Like they can cause all sorts of trouble. So we have any parasites of all shapes and forms, and anyone who's been to Indo on a surf trip or anyone who's been to India, you know, they all know what I'm talking about. So these parasites can bunker down, and once again, they will change the pH of our gut environment to suit their needs. So they will multiply. And our beneficial microbes literally die out because the pH has changed. Those parasites will build that little house, their biofilm. But what they do is they release very toxic ammonia into the body and into the bloodstream. And so if someone comes to see us at Culture Wellness and they've got anxiety or mental health problems, I know for sure that they've got parasites because those parasites with that ammonia release, it really hits the body and causes an imbalance in our mental health. And anyone who's got, you know, back pain or tight muscles, we know that parasites are a really classic one for that. So they basically eat our food. They assimilate our nutrients instead of us. And so people who have had parasites for a very long period of time are very nutrient deficient. You know, they're really lacking the beautiful B vitamins. They're not digesting their protein. And these parasites, unfortunately, they love a crowd and they love other friends and they all get together and they join together as a team and multiply. And can the parasites can move. We can have them in our liver. We can have them, you know, in our kidneys. We can have them in our gut. And they really can cause quite a lot of havoc. And especially for kids, it's not just as simple as, you know, having an itchy bum, you know, or being a bit cranky. They've been linked to, you know, learning difficulties, dyslexia, all sorts of things. So very, very important to get them tested.
And you can test that through the bioscreen, through the stool sample?
Absolutely.
I just want to finish off just before we wrap it up. But you said something before about that our gut microbes, whether it be the parasite or the candida or whatever they are that's in there, crave certain foods. So tell me a little bit more about that, because people do crave foods out there, but it's not really them, is it? It's what's going on inside their gut.
I call it a bug war. I've got a name for everything, Pete. So here's the next one. It's called a bug war. So some people who are really trying to change the state of their microbes and eat the beautiful, you know, fermented foods and eating all of that nourishing fiber that's going to, you know, grow beneficial microbes, they literally can't do it when, say, a parasite's in there. Sending messages through our vagus vein from our gut to our brain telling us, eat the donut, you know, eat, you know, whatever it is, you know, any form of sugar. And those infections, those parasites, whatever they are in there, they literally dictate the kind of food that we want to eat. And I know from my own experience, I mean, oh gosh, I just used to love carbohydrates. I had, you know, a pretty horrible diet. And it was all carbohydrate based. It wasn't sort of lollies and sugars. It was just, you know, breads and, you know, chips and all those sorts of things. And I couldn't understand how someone would sit down to dinner and eat a salad. I just never got it. It just didn't, literally didn't compute in my brain. Whereas now I've, you know, had a great opportunity to rebalance my gut, and certainly that candida that, you know, really thrives on all those carbohydrates. Now I couldn't imagine eating the chips, and I love sitting down to vegetables because I've got microbes now that are requesting that. That's how they live. That's the kind of pH they want. That's the food. That's the fiber. And that's how they grow. So they do literally dictate what you want to eat, and they dictate who you want to hang out with. So, we're attracted to people who have the same gut bugs as us. So it's pretty funny.
Really?
Yeah, totally.
That's for another podcast, I think, that one.
Oh, I love it. I love it. That's a very interesting area to go into.
So let's finish off with just a couple of Kirsty's most delicious ingredients for her recipe of life that she'd like to share with the listeners.
Oh, so my recipe of life, I couldn't keep it to one. I have to say it for two, unfortunately. So my biggest thing is understanding your body as a unique individual and being in tune with your body. That is the biggest recipe for life. So when you know your body and what it needs, life becomes really, really easy. And that also comes back to being connected to nature. That's my other biggest, most major recipe for life, that when we're connected to nature and our bodies, then everything just seems to thrive from there. So listening to both of those things.
Well, that is beautiful. Kirsty, thank you so much for being on our podcast. And I'm sure all the listeners have loved hearing your words of wisdom. And we love you. And we can't wait to get you back onto the podcast in the future. And we'll talk about how we choose our partners from our gut bacteria. Thanks, Kirsty. Love you.
The information, views, and opinions expressed in this podcast should not be treated as a substitute for nutritional, medical, or other advice by a qualified professional. Guests in this podcast express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. Nothing in this podcast should be used to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any medical condition. Neither Pete Evans nor any sponsor endorse any views, opinions, or conclusions expressed or shared in this podcast.